Okay, it's been a while, but we're going to complete the second chapter of Tanya, please God, tonight. And in doing so, we're going to answer an interesting question. One of the idiosyncratic features of the Hasidic movement was the idea of a Rebbe, of having a Rebbe. The concept of this spiritual leader that, of course, existed in Judaism always, but the Hasidic twist on it seemed to emphasize a different level of connection between the followers and the leaders. The idea of a Rebbe is more than just a rabbi, not just somebody who teaches, who answers questions, and who gives direction, but a spiritual leader that develops a soul connection with his followers. There's like some deeper type of spiritual connection that a chassid, a follower of the Rebbe has. And this is something that, again, it certainly existed in Judaism before, but not with the same emphasis as the Hasidic movement gave it. The first Rebbe was the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of the Hasidic movement. And then amongst his students, there was the Magid of Mezritch, who was the main leader. And from the Magid's students spread out many different Rebbes. One of them was the Alter Rebbe, the author of the Tanya. And there were several others. And then from there, they became dynasties, where the son or the son-in-law or the student of one Rebbe took over from the one before. And the way the followers of the Rebbe would venerate him and follow every word and listen to every word and watch every movement was something that was noteworthy about the Hasidic movement. There was this idea that to reach a connection with Hashem, you needed the Rebbe to direct you on how to do that. Not that the Rebbe was in any way, God forbid, replacing God. God is God. But to have your connection to Hashem, to know how to serve Hashem, to know your place in the divine picture, the Rebbe had that vision, had that power, had that insight to give that to you and to give you that direction. And the question is, why do you need that? Why would we need a Rebbe to give us that inspiration? Why can't we get it ourselves? Particularly in light of what we've learned in chapter 2 of Tanya, and that is that each one of us has a soul that is a piece of God. We all have a divine soul. And that divine soul being a piece of God means literally a piece of God, a piece of Hashem inside of us. We have this divine drive that is at the core of our being, that is intimately and always connected with Hashem. Why do I need anybody else to forge that connection or direct me in that connection? I've got it. I've got it in my soul. So this question becomes even sharper in light of the way the Alter Rebbe has described our soul. Before we learned this idea in Tanya, we knew we have a neshama, a soul. But if I would ask somebody who had not studied these ideas, what is a soul? It's your spiritual drive. In fact, you'd probably describe it more like the Alter Rebbe has described the animal soul as being that thing that keeps you alive, that animates you. The Alter Rebbe said, "Well, that's the animal soul. That's a lower level. That's klipa. It's spiritual, but it's a lower level. You have a higher level, which is your divine soul, a piece of God Himself." Well, if that's the case, so then why do I need anybody else to connect me with Hashem? I've got it in me. I've got it inside of me. But with what the Alter Rebbe described in this chapter about the nature of the soul, we gain a bit of an understanding as to why a Rebbe is needed. Because he said, he used a metaphor which we studied last time of the development of a child. That when a father impregnates a mother who then gives birth to a child, so the child is an expression of the essence of the father and then expressed through the mother as well, and then born. But the development of that child starts with the brain and develops down into the toenails, and every part of that child is a reflection of the essence of the Father, from the brain down to the toenails. This is what we saw in chapter 2 earlier. This metaphor was used to describe how it's possible that our souls all come from one place, one source, God, even though some souls are more like brain souls, some souls are more like toenail souls. Tanya pointed out that there are some, in every generation and amongst the generations, there are higher and lower souls. There are some people who are on an extremely high spiritual plane and others who are not, just naturally. Of course, we can all develop and grow and challenge ourselves, but everyone's born with certain capacities. There are some extremely holy people by nature and others less so. If we all come from the same source, how could we be on such different levels? And he answered that with this metaphor. Well, look at the body. The body all comes from one source, from the essence of the parents. And yet, the body has brain and toenails. It all comes from one place, but in the development of the body, some parts of the body become brain, some get translated all the way down into the feet and the toenails, and everything in between. But it all comes from one place. So too, all souls come from one place, they all come from God, but in their translation, in their journey downwards, some of them retain a higher level of spiritual connection, others go to lower levels. And each one has its place, like in a body. You need toenails. You kind of have brains instead of toenails. Everyone has their place. Some are the visionaries, and some are the feet, the foot soldiers. So with that metaphor, it comes out that in every generation, there is like a body of souls, and there are heads, and there are feet. And so the heads of the generation, they are the visionaries, the holy leaders, who have a level of insight and a level of communion with the divine, where they can give direction to the rest of the body. Just like the human brain directs the various parts of the body, has the vision and the picture and the perspective to direct the way the body functions, so too there are souls who are the head souls. And that they're called Rosh B'nai Yisrael, the head of the Jewish people, the heads of the Jewish people, Rosh, the head of the Jewish people. Which it's pointed out that if you take the initials of that phrase, Rosh B'nai Yisrael, Reish Beit Yud, it spells Rebbe. That's what a Rebbe is. A Rebbe is a head of the Jewish people.
How do you say
Rosh B'nai Yisrael. So, we did touch upon this last time, that such a role is one that you're born into. You're born with the power to, at least. It takes a lot of work to actualize those powers, but certain souls are just born with that potential, and others not. And that's not an insult in any way to those who are not.
So I'm citing the prince, the heads of the tribes, in the Midbar.
Yep.
Were they spiritual people, or were they physical? Like, where was their prowess? Why were they the princes of their tribe?
Well, they were spiritual leaders. That Moshe was the head. He was the Rebbe, the head of the generation. But then he appointed subheads as well to lead specific groups. And they were spiritual leaders. I mean, their job was to teach Torah and to give direction.
So they weren't Kohanim?
Not necessarily, no. There was one group of Kohanim, and then each tribe had its own leaders. And so all the heads of the Jewish people could be from any tribe. In a way, it's an open field, you know, that it could be somebody from any background and any family and somebody who attains that level. They were given the potential, they were born with that soul, but as we'll see, it's not necessarily a particular family that it'll come from. Not the Cohen family or the royal family, the tribe of Yehuda, who was royalty. It could be from anyone.
Okay.
So just like when you look at the body, so the foot can't make decisions. That's not the role of the foot. Because the foot has a very specific purpose and a very specific place in the body. The head, on the other hand, has the capacity for decision and also has the sensitivity, feels what's going on in the entire body. And so if you're a foot soul, let's say, you have your perspective as a foot soul, as that part of the body. That's your role, and that's good. That's where you should be. But you need to also recognize that that's a limited perspective. I'm just the foot. There's another foot. And apart from the other foot, there's a whole body there, and there's a whole vision there that I don't have. The brain has all that because it's connected with the entire picture. And so that's what a Rebbe soul is somebody who has that big picture. First of all, of the entire Jewish people, has a sense of the entire Jewish people and the needs of the entire Jewish people. There's no individual that they don't care about or don't need to worry about. They care about every single individual amongst Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. And they also have a vision of what the Jewish people, where we're supposed to go, what we're here to do. A collective vision as well as the individual vision of each one. And that was their power. And all the stories that we read of the great Rebbes and their ability to direct a person in their personal life to go a certain way that was unexpected, or, you know, that, like, no one would have thought, or it was counterintuitive. That's because they're seeing this soul and what that soul's mission is and its place in the big picture. That was their power. That's the power of a head soul that a particular part of the body can't have. We don't have that perspective.
But that power clearly existed before the onset of Hasidim.
Certainly. Certainly did. And like everything, and like I mentioned, that everything, all the ideas of Hasidus, they're not new, but they're given a new emphasis or new understanding. So of course there was always a Moshe Rabbeinu in every generation. There are always those type of visionaries. But I guess what we're learning in Tanya is a bit of understanding. You could have thought that they're just very smart people, very clever, they're very intelligent. Or the, you know, very very spiritually in tuned people. He was saying it's actually something deeper. They're the head of a body, and the souls are actually connected, intimately connected. And the head doesn't just give direction to the foot, doesn't just give instructions to the foot. It gives life to the foot. It enlivens the foot. And so the Tanya is going to explain what that relationship actually means in real terms. So we're on the middle paragraph of the page. It starts with this explains. Going on what we said before, this metaphor of the body of the Jewish people having a head and a foot, certain souls being the head and others being other parts of the body. This explains the comment of our sages on the verse. And to cleave to him, it says, avoid tidbak. It says that you should cleave to God. Cleave meaning stick to him, connect yourself to God. So the Talmud asks on that, he who cleaves unto a scholar of the Torah is deemed by the Torah as if he had become attached to the very Shekhinah, the Divine Presence. The Talmud questions, how is it possible to stick to God? How can you connect yourself to God? How's it possible? Hashem is not a thing that we can stick ourselves to. How can you connect yourselves with Hashem? This is the Talmud, not a Kabbalistic or a Hasidic work. The Talmud says, how do you connect to God? So says the Talmud, he who cleaves to a scholar of Torah, a Talmid Chacham, is deemed by the Torah as if he'd become attached to the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence. So the Talmud already is telling us, and this is mainstream Judaism, this is not any particular sect of Judaism, that connecting yourself to a Talmid Chacham is connecting yourself to God. And Talmid Chacham, the term Talmid Chacham, literally means a student of wisdom or a student of the wise. But more specifically, what that means is somebody who themselves is completely nullified to God. We'll see soon in Tanya, in chapter 3, that the word chacham comes from chachma, which literally is translated as wisdom, but what it actually means is the power to nullify yourself, the ability to be nothing. Koachma, the word chachma can be read as koachma, the ability to be ma, nothing. Just like when it comes to wisdom, to understand a concept, the only way you can ever understand a new concept, to have chachma, is being nothing, opening yourself up to it. As long as you're stuck in your preconceived ideas and notions, you don't hear anything new. You just hear things that you knew already. You translate everything you hear, you pigeonhole it into something that you already knew. To gain something new, you have to be completely open, like nothing. That's the power of chachma. A Talmud chacham means a Talmud, a student, somebody who has personified the power of chachma of nothingness. A true Talmud chacham is a person who doesn't live about in a way about themselves. They're not egotistical or self-centered in any way. They're completely nullified to the divine, to Hashem. That's a Talmud chacham. And when you stick to that person, you're sticking to Hashem because they are completely transparent. Their whole life is not about them. It's about something higher. I may not be that on that level. I'm a bit of an ego. I am a bit worried about myself and self-concerned. And I'm just not on that level. But that person is. That person is on that level of total nullification to God. If I hang around them, if I stick to them, then it rubs off on me. I'm connecting to the divine. The telltale sign that you have met a Talmud Chacham is you feel closer to Hashem through that person. Through their teachings, you feel closer to the divine. Not closer to them, not you're into them, you're into something higher than them.
But you still admire that person.
Correct.
So you're elevating that person. So he's at a higher level than you.
Correct. Yep.
So it's, we can, and I've struggled always with this about the ribbon and how it's perceived, but we're all equal in the eyes of God. I assume we've all got the spark of God.
Correct.
The spark may manifest in different ways.
Yes.
But it's all there.
Yep.
But, you know, the concept of, I think, deifying, but sort of, you know, don't you think that some people maybe have the wrong attitude towards the Rebbe?
That could be. And people have free choice to do whatever they want. But the idea of equality, yes, we're all equal because we're all part of the divine. That's true. The question is, how much have you revealed and accessed that divine nature that you have? The Rebbe is somebody who has done this all the way, who is fully aligned with the divine wisdom and will, and that's all. There's just nothing else in their life. Whereas the rest of us can't say that. We've got it inside us, but how much we've actualized it, not necessarily. That's why if you look at the people who have interacted with the Rebbe, they come out impressed, but it's not impressed that, like, wow, what a great guy. It's like, I've got to be a better person. Meeting such a person inspires me to be a better person. I've got to lift my game. That's the sign of a tzaddik, of a Talmud Chacham. That it inspires me to lift higher. And that's the role of a Rebbe. If going and having in contact with a Rebbe meant I'm so excited about the Rebbe, you missed the point. Of course you should be excited about the Rebbe, but if that's it, that's all there is, it has to be, okay, so now I have to improve. I want to be better. I want to be better me because I've met that person. That's a different power. You know, there are a lot of celebrities out there. There are a lot of people with charisma, charismatic leaders that make you want to get more of them or spend money or you know, get excited about them, that's not holy. That's charisma. But somebody who any contact with them makes you want to be a better person, that's a different story. That we're talking about a different league. So when you cleave to a Torah scholar, Talmud Chacham, when you cleave to somebody who is nullified on that level, you're cleaving to the Shechina, the divine presence. So says the Talmud. As the Tanya continues, third line, for through attachment to the scholars, the nefesh, ruach, and neshama of the ignorant are bound up and united with their original essence and their root in the supernal wisdom. The ignorant, meaning you may not be anywhere near that level, but when you hang around somebody on that level, when you connect to them, when you listen to them, when you learn their words and study them, so then your soul, nefesh, ruach, and neshama, the levels of your soul, are bound up with your source, your divine source, because the tzaddik, the holy man, is connected to that source completely. And when you're connected to the supernal wisdom, he and his wisdom being one, God and his wisdom are all one. He is the knowledge, as we mentioned earlier in Tanya, that the divine wisdom is the source of our soul. Just like we said that the baby, the child, is born from the essence of the father. And that wisdom is one with Hashem's self. And so, simply by being connected, by studying the words of a tzaddik, like we're doing now, the Alter Rebbe was certainly a tzaddik. He was a Rebbe. By studying his words, by aligning with his wisdom, by connecting to his inspiration, it's touching something in our neshama. Something is happening inside of us right now. As we do this, we are connecting to our source. And when you connect to your source, you can't help but be a little bit more refined, lifted a little bit above where you were before. So, like the brain rules over the entire body and spreads life through the entire body, the holy person, the tzaddik, the Rebbe, is the source of life for all souls and connects us to our ultimate source, to the divine source. And in the brackets he says, but what about, as for them who willfully sin and rebel against the sages, what about people who don't connect to the sages, to the Talmud Chacham, that rebel against and speak against and are not interested in this? What happens to them? The nurture of their nefesh, ruach, and neshama comes from behind the back, as it were, of the nefesh, ruach, and neshama of the scholars. They still get their life force from the scholars, from the Talmud Chacham, from the Rebbe, but behind the back. Behind the back is a metaphor for when the life force comes, but in a reluctant way as opposed to a loving way. You can give face to face and you can give over the shoulder. When you give face to face, you give somebody lovingly and willingly. When you give over the shoulder, it's like reluctantly. Okay, here, you know, you also get. So those who rebel against the tzaddik, they also get their life force from the tzaddik. He's still the head. He's the head of all. But just the life force doesn't come in an energetic, in a loving way, in a more reluctant way. But they get it as well.
So now, who would be the head, the one who's the divine presence now? If there's no Rebbe.
Well, it's a good question. There are different levels of sages in all generations. There's always sages, and there are holy people. Some we know, some we don't know. There are the teachers of every generation, but even the Rebbe or the Alter Rebbe or those from the previous generations, on a soul level, we still connect with them. And so, by studying the teachings of the Tanya, we're connecting to the Alter Rebbe as the head, and by studying the Rebbe's teachings and following them, we're connecting to him the same way. It's a continuum. All these souls are like connected. So when you connect willingly, you get a flow of inspiration directly from the tzaddik. When you oppose the tzaddik, when you're not interested in this, you're still going to get the life force. Like the brain, it's going to give life to the entire body. But sometimes there are parts of the body, limbs of the body, that are not functioning all that well. They're still getting their life force from the brain, but in a roundabout way or in a reluctant way. It's interesting. How do you know that a part of your body is not working correctly? How do you know if you're unwell in a part of your body? The immediate sign is the fact that you even feel it. If you even become aware about a part of your body, that already is a sign that it's not functioning so well. Because when you're healthy, you don't notice anything. Like when you don't have a stomach ache, you don't notice your stomach. You don't feel it. Your stomach is just doing its thing because it's nullified. It's just going. As soon as it feels itself, okay, there's a problem. I've got something wrong. My toe, I don't feel it unless there's a problem. So too with the soul body of the Jewish people, that when we're connected to the brain, when we're sort of just following and doing our mission and doing what we need to do, so then we get our life force directly from the brain soul, which gets from the divine directly, and we just do our thing. If we're disconnected from that vision, if we're not functioning, if I'm worried about myself and stuck in myself, I'm still getting the life force, but like the flow is not so good. It's not flowing so naturally. So this is how the Alter Rebbe explains the position of a Rebbe from the Hasidic perspective.
It's hard to understand. I mean, I don't know whether it was just because that there's only one Rebbe at a time. There weren't others in that particular
dynasty. There were other Rebbes, but different dynasties.
And I'm sorry, yeah, okay. But even here within one dynasty, even in the Hasidic dynasty, I mean, everything was passed down and there was an expectation or a sort of a natural lineage, but it's hard to conceptualize the fact that there wasn't anybody else.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because the Rebbe himself did say that each one of us has in us a Rebbe that we have to try and activate. And it seems that a feature of our generation is a lack of leadership in all areas of life and in all parts of the world. Like this time in history, we don't have leaders. I mean, the people who we call leaders or in positions of leadership, but that's they're not leaders so much.
And people who could be leaders don't want to be leaders.
Often that's the case. But it also seems that, like, on the one hand, there's that dearth of leadership. On the other hand, there is such a access to information and to inspiration and to self-motivation that there wasn't in previous times. It's like more is expected of us today. It used to be that there were leaders that sort of did the work and you sort of just followed and did your thing. They worked out the big problems and you just went about your business. Now, who are they? Where are they? Where are those people? In every, I'm not just talking about in Judaism, in every area of life. Like, where are these great visionary leaders? They seem to have gone. But on the other hand, we all have access to all the information. So we all have to work it out ourselves. So I think, you know, the spiritual world and the material world are always in sync, like, say, the reflections of each other. So I think in the spiritual world as well, the fact that there isn't that Rebbe in the physical sense that you can just go to and ask the question and get the direction. No, but we've got all the information that the Rebbe gave, and we've got more access to it than ever. So in a way, we've got more Rebbe, but we have to make it. We have to access that ourselves. We have to activate it more on our own. And that's, that seems to be the Rebbe himself said that Mashiach is the next stage. Like there's nothing in between. That's what Mashiach is about the whole world coming to this realization. And
we never had the tools before, and now we've got all the tools and our expectation.
Mm-hmm.
But the tools aren't the important thing. It's like you said, not everybody, you know, some people are brain cells, so that some people do not have the capability. What you're saying is of being in touch with yourself. You can read as much as you want, but you may, it doesn't really help you to, you know, have the emotional intelligence to be able to. And that's what you're saying the Rebbe has.
Mm.
So I can't see that every individual has within them already.
Well, on some level, but we have each other as well. There are some people who can channel that more than others. And, you know, the Rebbe, he himself, even in his lifetime even, he said, everybody should have their own mentor. Not him. You should have a mentor. Somebody who you can talk to on a regular basis to lead you. And to be a mentor, they just have to be a few rungs ahead of you. Somebody who's just a bit higher level than you're on, okay, that's good enough to be your mentor. But everyone has to have that. Then find yourself a mentor. And that mentor themselves should have a mentor, and eventually it goes up all the way. And everyone can teach somebody. Okay. So, having taught this idea, the Alter Rebbe ends the chapter with an interesting question on this concept. We've established the idea that there are different levels of souls. There are head souls and there are feet souls and everything in between. And it seems to be that this is divinely chosen. Like, God gives each one of us the soul that is our place, where we belong. And we contribute our bit. The Alter Rebbe now presents a possible contradiction to this idea from a Kabbalistic source that seems to say that it's not divinely ordained what grade of soul a child has when they're born. It's not decided by God. It's determined by the parents. Have a look at the last paragraph. As for what is written in the Zohar and the Zohar Chadash, two sections of the same work of Zohar, the Kabbalistic work, to the effect that the essential factor is to conduct oneself in a holy manner during sexual union, which is not the case with the children of the ignorant, and so on. Meaning, the Zohar says that when parents conceive a child during the sexual union, the way they conduct themselves, their thoughts and their behavior, if it's in a holy and elevated way, it will bring a holy and elevated soul into the world. If the sexual union is conducted in an uncouth, lowly, brazen way, that's the type of soul you're going to bring into the world. Mm. Bit of a worry. Mm. But so says the Zohar.
I wonder on what basis you said
that.
That is your second conclusion.
Sorry?
How did they reach that conclusion?
Well, this is a Kabbalistic work. And so it's revealing the mystical secrets of the world and saying that the thoughts that you have at the time of conception.
It makes sense because they said that the sperm starts with the thoughts in the brain. It starts from the brain, travels through the spine down. So it makes sense.
Should have incorporated into marriage.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, hang on a minute. The Zohar is telling us that the conduct, all the way down to the thoughts of the parents at the time of conception, is going to determine what type of soul comes out. A higher soul comes from a higher conception, with holy thoughts and pure emotions. Whereas if it was in a more selfish, hedonistic way, or in a lower intention, so then a lower soul is going to come out. Well, this seems to contradict what we're saying until now, because until now it sounded like God determines which soul goes where. Now we're saying, well, no, it's the thoughts of the parents. And now we can understand why there wouldn't be so many holy souls coming down, maybe, but it would then mean only very holy parents are going to have very holy children. The very unholy will have very unholy children, and the ones in between will have, you know, in between. But like, that'll pretty much be without exception, because if according to Zohar, it says the essential factor is the conduct. Like, this is the main thing, is the conduct of the parents at conception. The main thing that determines the soul of the child. So what's the story? Fascinatingly, the Alter Rebbe explains it like this. It is to be understood, the third line there in the paragraph, it is to be understood as meaning that since there is not a nefesh, ruach, and neshama, which is not has not a garment of nefesh of its father's and mother's essence, and all the commandments that it fulfills are all influenced by that garment, and even the benevolence that flows to one from heaven is all given through that garment. Hence, through self-sanctification, one will cause to descend for the neshama of one's child a holy garment. Okay. The Alter Rebbe here differentiates between the soul and the garment of the soul. The levush, the garment of the soul. A way to understand this would be like there's a person and there's the garments you wear. There's the essence and then there's the trappings. So too with the soul. Every soul has its essential nature. And every soul also has its trappings, its garments. Maybe we'd call it a personality. You could have a person who has an extremely holy soul, but they have a bit of a rough personality. And so their holy soul may come out, but it might have a bit of a struggle or resistance to coming out because their external trappings, their personality is not so refined. On the other hand, you could have somebody whose soul may not be of the highest rank. It's an average soul, but their personality is very refined, is very subtle, has a certain spiritual tendency, so they're able to connect to their soul in a greater way. We see this with people. There are some people who are spiritually inclined, naturally, and there are some people who are just not. In one family, you can have one child who is just into spiritual things, and another who just doesn't get it, just doesn't talk to them. Does that mean that this child has a higher soul and this one has a lower soul? Not necessarily. The garment of the soul, the filter of the soul is different. Some souls are just more open to spirituality, some are less open to spirituality. That's the garment of the soul. It doesn't tell us about the essence of what that soul is, it's more the personality of the soul. You could have a very high soul, a very holy soul that has a lot of resistance to it. And you could have a lesser holy soul, but just is more open to it.
I get it. I don't understand what I believe. You know, we obviously think anthropomorphically, but maybe that's my mistake. But I don't understand why would a soul not be able to manifest itself. I don't understand the scam of vision.
It sometimes happens that you meet somebody or you know somebody or you grow up with somebody who's very anti-religion, anti-Judaism, anti-God, like really against it all. They have an attitude to it. And they're allergic to it. Anytime it's brought up, they don't want a bar of it. Always fighting against it, and that's how they are. Why? Why is that person that way? I mean, it could be because of a bad experience they had. It could be because of a misunderstanding or a bad education or an attitude that somebody fed into them. But sometimes it just seems like almost ingrained that this person has an attitude to spirituality. And sometimes that person, at some stage in their life, something happens and they completely flip. They get inspired, or they have the right influence or the right exposure, or something happens, and that person, and they turn around 180 degrees to be completely involved and embraced into Judaism and spirituality, into God. They're believers. What happened here? So it could be that person had a very powerful soul, a very spiritual and lofty type of soul, but that soul was covered over with a layer of resistance to spirituality that made them blocked towards it. And it took a certain moment of piercing that layer to allow the inner soul to come out.
Why do you presuppose it was hidden? Why wasn't it something new that happened? You know, it was a bolt of lightning. It was chokhmah. It was a flash. This is the correct thing to do.
I'll tell you why. Because it's too extreme for that. If they didn't have it in them, where did this come from?
Well, so do you know this guy that was, you know, he was a Ukrainian or Hungarian anti Jewish guy. Do you remember the story?
Yes, and then he was anti-Semite, and he found out he was Jewish.
Huh? Nazi.
Yeah. Neo-Nazi fascist. Yeah. Yeah.
And he turned around.
Right.
You can interpret that in many different ways. One of which you're saying, well, the Nishan was allowed to show itself. But he said, goodness me, I'm Jewish. Let me find out about this.
Right, but if you look at that example, it's one thing for him to say, okay, maybe I shouldn't be an anti-Semite anymore. You know, I was a neo-Nazi, I hated Jews, then I found out that actually I'm Jewish. So for him to say, okay, I'm retiring from politics, I'm not going to be involved with this anymore, because like I didn't know who I was, now I know who I am, and like I can't, you know, that's one thing. But for him to embrace it and to turn around to that extreme, what, just because this piece of information you got, because of a DNA test, because your grandmother said this, that shouldn't turn you around 180 degrees, unless there's something in you that has now been revealed. And so it really is you. And so that's the idea here, that there's the essence of your soul, and then there's the garment of your soul. The essence of your soul is who you really are. The garment of your soul is your personality that surrounds that soul. What the Alter Rebbe says here, the essence of your soul is chosen by God. Hashem gives you your soul, and that is your power, your mission, your true identity, your deepest self. That's determined by Hashem. That's nothing to do with your parents. What your parents give you is the garment of your soul, the personality that surrounds that soul, and that is influenced by your parents, not just genetically by your parents, but even by the thoughts, the intentions that your parents had at your conception. That's going to determine the layers around your soul. If the parents had lofty thoughts, And an elevated relationship and a pure connection with love and deep connection, so then that's going to give a more refined garment of the soul for the child, and the opposite. it's a head start that the parents give, or it's a bit of a handicap that the parents give, that the...
It doesn't help one now, right? I mean, it's more around you as a... That particular thought. I mean, in terms of us as individuals thinking what our role is, you know, it's too late for that. That's for the next generation of childbearers that are going to need to...
Correct. This horse is run. Yeah. That's true, but I guess what it does is gives us a bit of understanding of ourselves and of others. That like when you see somebody who is spiritually uncouth, doesn't mean they have a lowly soul. I mean, we all have there's many things we inherit from our parents. There's many personality traits and habits and genetic, we have a lot of things that we inherit from our parents. This is another one. This is like, add it to the list of things we can blame our parents for and our kids can blame us for. But yeah, definitely.
That is the strongest form of garment that is given, is when your parents conceive you, in other words, in a holy manner.
Yeah, when we're talking about someone's spiritual tendencies, This is gonna be a big determining factor, but it's not the only factor. Of course, there are many other factors, including education and environment and.
I was going to say, so the environment, the family create.
Correct. And I think the reason why he calls it a garment is because a garment can be changed. An essence can't be changed. A garment can be changed. This is the garment you were given. But the garment can be worked on. It's not a predetermining factor, but it's an influence. So
where does that fit in the nature versus nurture argument?
Well, nature would be the essence of your soul. That's your nature. That you're born with. Whether you're the foot soul or the shoulder soul or the elbow soul, that's where you are. And you can't change that. There's no point to change that. This is where you're supposed to be. But then how easy are you to be in touch with your soul? How in tune are you with your soul? You're born with also a certain garment, a certain starting point, and that you have to work on and refine. You can refine that. So he says that all the commandments that you fulfill are influenced by that garment. Whether you do mitzvahs easily, they come easily to you, or not so easy, it's going to be influenced by the garment of your soul. You may have a very holy soul, but if the garment is thick, you're going to have a resistance to doing mitzvahs. It's going to be harder. You have to overcome a little bit more. And even the benevolence that flows to one from heaven is all given through that garment, which here it's referring to like spiritual insight. The spiritual insight that you receive, the spiritual connection that you feel, it's all through the garment. So some people say, I just don't feel it. It's not that they don't believe in God. It's not that they don't have a soul. It's just that there's a bit more of a blockage to it, and they're going to have to pierce it. Something pierces it. At some stage, something will get through. So if somebody says, I'm not the spiritual type, there's no such thing as not the spiritual type. You have a soul. What could be more spiritual than that? You have a piece of God in you. What could be more spiritual? Just there's a garment that is blocking that. Okay, so it's a matter of the right time and the right person and the right place, and we pierce through that garment and you feel it.
So when do you blame the garment and when do you blame the animal soul? I mean, I thought the animal soul was the barrier to the manifestation of spiritual soul. Now you're introducing another concept here.
Good question. So even if you have a beautiful soul and you have a very refined garment, you also have an animal soul. Each one of us we have an internal resistance to all this spirituality. What here it's saying is that even when you're not in the clutches of your animal soul, when you're in a divine soul mode, the garment is going to determine how easy that flow is, how connected you are, how easy it is to do a mitzvah or not. Apart from that, we have a struggle, which the rest of Tanya is going to talk about, between the animal and the divine soul. That we all have. But how ready are you to even recognize that? To even recognize that you have this struggle and that you have a soul? That will depend on the garment.
So how does one know which is active at the time? I mean, is it important to know?
Where the divine or the animal?
No, why isn't the neshama manifesting the way that it's optimal?
Yeah, because I think what this is saying is that, like, for some people, it just takes longer for the penny to drop in these ideas of spirituality. There are some people who they don't get it. It doesn't resonate to them at the moment. It just doesn't resonate with them. It doesn't click. And it may not be, it's not an animal soul thing that they're resisting it. It's that their divine soul has a cover over it that needs to be chipped away at. Every time we do a mitzvah, every time we do something holy, we refine that garment. We make it a little bit less opaque. We've got to be patient. And not judge ourselves or another soul as saying, oh, that's a lowly soul. No, not necessarily. This there could be a very powerful soul there, but just it's covered over a bit. Needs a bit more time.
Okay. You're not doing it because you want to do it?
What do you mean?
That you're doing something good because you want to do good?
As opposed to what?
Not doing it at all.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. But sometimes you have to do good even though you don't want to do good. You also have to do it. Sometimes you have to break yourself to do good. Sometimes you're not in the mood.
So when the penny drops, it doesn't mean you've changed your animal soul. I always thought that was, you know, the animal soul retreated a little bit when that happened. But you're saying that's not necessarily the case.
Every time you do good, you reinforce the divine soul, and the animal soul is forced to go along with it because your body did the mitzvah. And so the animal soul is somewhat subdued and like, moves along, yeah. But here I think it's more talking about the openness to the concept in the first place, the openness to spirituality in the first place. Like some people, you have this conversation, divine soul, animal soul, they're like, just don't know what you're talking about. I don't relate to this. Don't relate to the conversation in the first place. And that's not necessarily because their animal soul is blocking. It could be their divine soul has a blockage over it, the garment of their divine soul. I don't know if this will confuse further, but the Tzemach Tzedek, the grandson of the Alter Rebbe, when he explained this chapter, this garment, he said what the Alter Rebbe here is hinting at is actually a third soul. And in other writings of the Alter Rebbe, he speaks about a third soul, the divine soul, the animal soul, and the intellectual soul. Nefesh HaSichlis. He doesn't speak about it in Tanya, but Tzemach Tzedek says he's hinting at it here. And that is in between our spiritual divine self and our animalistic instinctive self. there's our intellectual self. Our ability to intellectualize, to hear a concept, hear an idea. And the nature of our intellect, our intellectual soul, a third soul, that is what's being spoken about here. Some people have a more spiritual intellect, and some people have a less spiritual intellect. We're talking here about esoteric things, abstract concepts. Some people just don't get it. If you're talking about the Coke and the table, I get it. When you talk about divine soul, animal soul, garments of the soul, I don't know what you're talking about. Not because they're not intelligent, but because their intellectual soul is not spiritually inclined at the moment. It's not a life sentence, but that's how they are at the moment.
So is that different to neshama? Because last week you said you got the nefesh, ruach, and neshama, the physical, emotional, and the heart, and intellect. So you're talking about the neshama.
Well, the truth is that the divine soul, the animal soul, they all have intellect, all have emotions. The question is, what's their central identity? The divine soul is spiritual in nature. The animal soul is desirous in nature. And then there's the intellectual soul, which is just about ideas, which could go either way. Ideas could be used to justify my animal desires, or ideas can elevate me to spiritual heights. It's in between. It's really a whole new topic, the intellectual soul, but it's a way to understand what he's saying here. Some people's minds are spiritually inclined and capture spiritual ideas naturally and easily, and others less so. That could be influenced much more by the parents' thoughts and conception, as opposed to the actual soul itself, that God decides.
We get to learn that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As he concludes the chapter, let's have a look. Hence, through self-sanctification, one will cause to descend for the neshama of one's child a holy garment, by being sanctified at the time of conception. And however great a soul it may be, it still needs the father's sanctification. Whatever you may be given a very holy soul, but if the parent don't have sanctified, elevated thoughts, it's going to be a blockage, a handicap for that soul. But as for the soul itself, it sometimes happens that the soul of an infinitely lofty person comes to be the son of a despised and lonely man. Don't think that a child of very spiritually lowly people must therefore have a spiritually lowly soul. No. It can happen that sometimes an extremely lofty soul is sent to very lowly people. And a holy child can be born from quite unholy parents. They'll have the challenge of the garment of the soul to overcome, but the neshama that was born was extremely high. All this has been explained by Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, the great Kabbalist of blessed memory, in the Kutei Torah on Parshas Vayera, and in Tamei Mitzvahs on Parshas Bereishis. You can look there and see more about it, this Kabbalistic idea. He says that sometimes specifically, when Hashem wants to send a very holy soul into the world, he sometimes chooses very lowly parents to house that soul. Because the powers of negativity that try to oppose holiness would never expect that a holy soul will come from there. And so God sometimes sneaks very holy souls into the world through lowly parents, where it's least suspected. And that soul can bring about very, very powerful things in the world. Anyway, what we've learned and what we've seen from this chapter is that there is certainly a hierarchy of souls. There are souls that are head souls, there are whole souls that are feet souls. Every soul has its particular mission, what it needs to do, its place in the world. It's not an insult that I'm a lower soul or a higher soul. It's what I'm supposed to be. We all connect to the head soul, those leaders of the generations, the holy visionaries, the Rebbe souls who connect to us and give us direction. And it goes both ways. They feel us and we connect to them. I'll conclude with a quick story. There was once a family in France where they had a child who was very not well, and they'd sent letters to the Rebbe for blessings, and things hadn't worked out. It was still not going well, and at a certain point, the father, he saw a picture of the Rebbe on the wall, and he got so frustrated, he threw a shoe at the picture, and it hit the picture, knocked it on the ground. Anyway, he felt very bad afterwards, but like it was an expression of his frustration. Sometime later, he was in New York, and he went by the Rebbe for a blessing. And as he went past, the Rebbe said to him, "It still hurts."
His stories like this, it's unbelievable.
So you could explain this story in several ways. One you could say is that somehow the Rebbe's picture, he feels his picture. He's like looking at us through the picture, and he's seeing everything through his pictures, and he's some sort of magical, you know, being that like wherever his picture is, he's really there and he knows what's going on. You could see it that way. But from learning Tanya, I would say differently. A Rebbe is somebody who feels you and what's going on in you. His soul is the head soul that feels what's going on in the entire body. When your foot hurts, it's your brain that feels it more than your foot. Your brain is telling you that there's a pain in your foot. The foot has no clue what's going on. The foot doesn't know. The brain knows the pain that's going on more than the foot. It's the message that the foot is sending to the brain that there's pain. A Rebbe soul is one that feels the pain of the entire body. And so it's not the picture that felt it, it's the Rebbe that felt it through his soul and his connection with all souls. That's a Rebbe.
Yeah.
Okay.
So who, if you're going to,